We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Blue Wire.
With the third pick in the 2020 NBA Draft, the Charlotte Hornets select LaMelo Ball from Chino Hills, California.
TJ. Oh, my goodness! Stunning with the left hand! Devontae deep! Oh, my goodness! I don't believe it! A 30-foot and about
stop it.
Just stop it already.
All right, everyone. Welcome into another BuzzBeat podcast. We are recording this immediately following the Hornets' 102-99 win over the Pistons in Detroit. So I believe that's 13 straight against this Pistons team that the Hornets have won. They are now 32-33 with 7 games remaining in the season. Before we get too deep into this episode, I wanted to tell you guys about our Buy Me a Coffee site. If you're listening right now, I'm sure you guys enjoy our podcast, and we have a way for you guys to support us with a donation. Now, if you never donate, we'd be okay, but your donation will get you guys some exclusive content. If you go to buymeacoffee.com/BuzzBeat, which I'll also put in the episode notes, you'll see a couple of free posts as well. I posted one on Miles Bridges last week, and you're going to get one from me on Terry Rozier in the coming days. Just think of this site as a site that comes in 3 tiers. You got the free post. There's also a tier called the supporter post, and those are for people that just make one-off donations, $2, $3, $4. And then you have the members, and they pay on a monthly basis. And those get the most amount or the most access. You get all the access to all the posts that are going to be on their website. So buymeacoffee.com/BuzzBeat. We do want to shout out another member on the site, Ajax Shahin, who is the brother of Michael on the previous episode that you guys were talking about his Twitter handle, Laser Glaciers. So
this is awesome. it's really good, isn't it?
It is. I was listening to you guys talk about it. You guys were just like just dumbfounded by the name and just like, wow, Laser Glaciers. So he said that he couldn't let his brother have all the spotlight, even though that his Twitter handle is a little bit better than his. But yes, we do appreciate the donation. So I am going to be joined by BG tonight. If you've heard him in the background here, Brian, how's it going?
Doing pretty well. Interesting game tonight and sort of like a newsy day for the Hornets, which we can certainly dive into. But yeah, everyone matters down the stretch. Feels like at this point, if you're Charlotte, you're really just gunning for 8, right? Like the 8th seed. That's really which you just got to be desperately trying to see if you can hold off Indiana and Washington. But so win's a win, especially on the road with missing some guys. But yeah, I'm doing pretty well, and I'm glad there's some nervy moments late in that game, and not the prettiest of games, but a good win for Charlotte nonetheless.
Yes. So currently speaking, as Brian mentioned, the Hornets would be in 8th place if the season ended today. It does not. They are 1.5 games above the Pacers with a record of 32-33. The last 2 weeks, according to Cleaning the Glass, they are 21st in offense and 25th in defense. So not great. It has not been a pretty sight to watch. But it's funny. This game to me, Brian, is one of those games as a Hornets fan, as someone that follows the team, and obviously you're playing the Pistons, even though the Pistons got within like 5 and 4 and 3 at certain points, to me, it never felt like they were going to overtake the lead. Sure, the Hornets probably should have put this game away a little bit earlier, but every time I felt like the Pistons got close, to me, it just seems like LaMelo and anyone on the court was just going to flip a switch, and they would just extend that lead a little bit more and give themselves a little bit more of a cushion. So watching this game, I didn't ever think it was in doubt, even though it did come close, right? I mean, it was a very close game towards the end where Killian Hayes had a chance to tie the game with seconds left to go, but he missed the three. He also missed the front end of a two-shot free throw attempts towards the end as well. So that's just kind of how I felt about it. I know that the Hornets are without a ton of players right now, but I did not at all really feel that nervous. I don't know if you got the same feeling from this game.
It wasn't until like the last minute. But even then, when Hayes was at the line, you're thinking like, well, worst case scenario, they'll go into overtime in five more minutes. Like they should outplay them. Cody was in foul trouble at the time, so that was like a little significant. You mentioned Killian Hayes. You know, it's been a weird season for him. And I think since he's come back, he's had a couple of good games. Tonight was not one of those games. One of six shooting, one of five on threes, one of two from the line. And the one miss he had was fairly significant. Couple sort of like just general keys to the game. We'll go back to the little tried and true keys to the game format here. But if I had to highlight it, just a couple of things, I thought, even though LaMelo didn't have like the greatest game shooting the basketball, three or five on threes, including a big spot up hit from the corner in the fourth quarter, that was significant. I thought his passing was like a huge swing piece in this game for them. Probably like it will be in a lot of games of his career, but he had a couple like highlight passes and then a couple other ones where like the play was sort of disjointed. It's one of those LaMelo situations where everything around him is chaos, but he can sort of just in the midst of all that chaos, everything slows down for him. He'll dribble a couple of times. He'll get an angle and he'll hit somebody for a finish. I thought he had a nice dime to Cody Zeller on one of these plays, but the touch path, the little like whip touch pass he had to McDaniels was nasty. And I just thought his passing was key. Struggled finishing again this game, but you know, was aggressive going into the paint and also trying to, you know, set guys up. Then like, you know, Terry Rozier shot making. I mean, once again, this guy was just awesome in the clutch. He had two really, really big hits in the mid-range. The mid-range was pretty pivotal for Charlotte in this game tonight. I was looking at this just a second ago. Well, they took a lot of volume from like 4 to 14 feet, actually did not hit that many of them, but got up a good volume from the mid-range area. But what I would say, what I was trying to get to was Rozier. They ran a couple plays for him. They ran that ghost action with LaMelo and Rozier. Rozier got a bucket off that. Then they ran the little horn set where they put Rozier at the elbow. They throw it to him. He ran a ball screen with either Biz or Zeller. I think it was Zeller. He missed the first shot, but he got his own rebound and put that back in. And just like, yeah, entering tonight, Rozier was shooting 54% in clutch minutes. He was 13 of 26 on threes. And then obviously with some big hits late in the game for Charlotte here as well. So, you know, you didn't think it was going to look pretty with them trying to like figure out offense after without Miles and PJ. Jalen McDaniels, it's sort of the third key, I would say. Yeah. Like his motor defensively, his length, his compete was really good. 12 rebounds, I think 9 on the defensive end. They had 4 stocks games in terms of blocks and steals, and he was like a couple seconds away from playing a career high in terms of minutes. He played 39 minutes in this game. I just thought he was really good. A nice bounce back game for Cody Zeller. But what did you peel away from this game?
I do want to mention Brad Wanamaker. I don't think that he gets enough recognition for the impact that he has made with this team. He's kind of like a one-trick pony in terms of what he can bring on the offensive end, in terms of just someone that can drive and get to the rim. And that's something that's been his most impactful asset with the Hornets so far. But he did hit a couple of mid-range shots in the game. I'm actually looking at the stats right now. He was 3 for 3 from 14 to three-point land and 2 for 4 in that 4 to 14 range. So he had hit several mid-range shots there. But one aspect of this game, I don't know if it was the most impactful or the most clutch, whatever you want to call it, It was late in the game where Detroit was going on a run, and they had cut the lead to 1 point with about 5 minutes left to go. And at this point, obviously, like I said, I was not nervous that the Hornets were going to lose, but this was the point in the game that the Pistons kind of went on their run, especially with Diallo. I looked up 35 points or whatever he had. I was like, I don't know how he had that. I just came out of nowhere. But anyway, Wanamaker, up one at this point, drives, attacks, finishes through contact, obviously puts the Hornets back up by three. And then the very next possession, I don't know if you remember this, but it might have been Diallo. It was Killian. One of the two was driving, and Wanamaker strips it, and it goes off a couple of knees. It eventually is retained by Detroit, but that two-way sequence right there, it killed any momentum that Detroit had. And then you highlighted this on Twitter, the immediate sub, LaMelo comes in, he steals it, throws it ahead to McDaniels for the dunk. So I know this game came down to the wire, but at that point in the fourth quarter where it felt like the tide was shifting to the Pistons, I felt like that two-way play by Brad Wanamaker there really killed any momentum by the Pistons at that point.
Yeah, and honestly, the margins were tight in this game. This was sort of classic trash ball NBA game. Charlotte, 8 of 31 on threes. Pistons, 9 of 32. Sadiq Bey had a bad shooting game. Killian Hayes had a bad shooting game. Over on the Hornets side. Unfortunately, tough game for Malik Monk. Mm-hmm. 0-5 on threes. Missed some shots at the rim. I do think, despite it being a tough night, I thought he had a couple of nice pick and roll possessions with Cody Zeller. Like, if you're going to highlight the good with Malik, I thought he had a couple of nice pick and roll possessions. Also, JB dialed up a couple in the first half, a couple after timeout plays for Malik. He was obviously not able to score out of them, but I thought Charlotte got some decent looks on that, and it was sort of encouraging. It probably points to something. Malik's going to have a bounce back game soon, right? He'll play better against Chicago or whatever. Does not look maybe like he quite has his like burst finishing. I mean, he said today, Richie, you may have even been a part of the media session where it seemed like Malik said that the ankle felt good for him to play on. But I think, as he's getting back into conditioning and stuff like that, just doesn't look quite like his sort of like twitchy, vertically explosive self as a finisher. So hopefully that sort of comes back, because certainly Charlotte would need that. And then we saw the dust get kicked off on Vernon Carey Jr. as he played 6.5 minutes, had two nice putback finishes for the Hornets. When Spencer and I did a pod last week, we talked about VCJ a little bit. And I don't think tonight changes the equation all that much. But one of the things I brought up on that pod was, if you were going to have Vernon Carey be a part of the playoff rotation or have some small role in the as like a potential reserve in the playoffs or whatever, you probably need him to get brought back into the maybe play another game or two. And unfortunately, these tough circumstances have brought that on with PJ and Miles being out. And again, I don't think him playing 6 minutes against Detroit changes that. I still don't think like he's like gonna. I don't think he's like back in the rotation, actually. You know what I mean?
Right.
But I guess we'll see how the next week progresses.
Yeah, I just can't see him being part of the play-in / playoff rotation. But to your point, if he was going to do that, he would have to get like a couple games under his belt.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
I do want to go back to Jalen McDaniels because you mentioned him as one of the keys to the game. 10 points, 12 rebounds, three offensive rebounds. He's the type of player that I feel like every team needs, like in the mold of Jalen McDaniels, where he is crashing the offensive glass, getting deflections, going after those 50-50 balls, doing all the little things that you would want out of a player like him. I think every team needs someone like him, and he hits the occasional three from time to time. I know he was only one of three tonight, but he can hit the three. And I think the one thing moving forward for Jalen, and I think this is not going to happen overnight, it's going to be something that happens over the offseason. We've talked about it in terms of his strength, but I think more like specifically his off the dribble strength. If he's trying to create room or create space for a shot, he doesn't really do that driving into the teeth of the defense. Like, he's not going to create that much room. Now, he did have a nice little, like, behind-the-back finesse play in the first quarter, but that's one thing that I did note. It's hard to make a lot of ground when you don't have the strength. But everything else he does, like, I just want to highlight and make sure that he gets the recognition that he does.
You agree. He does need to bulk up, like, you know, get a little bit more strength, perhaps. But, like, tonight's a little bit different. But normally, you know, McDaniels is going to be the fourth or the fifth guy out there. So a lot of times he's going to be just attacking off advantage, right? Where, you know, it's going to be him going by a closeout. It's like what we've seen the last couple of weeks from him, just in a smaller dose. So, you know, I think he has like enough sort of like functional strength, but you're right. It is, you know, he is like a little bit limited in terms of his like drive finishing. I mean, I think he has a little bit of craft to sort of like make do for the lack of strength. And certainly the length he has helps a good bit too. I continue to be impressed just like his opportunistic scoring, like the two great Melo plays passes that he had today, both were capped off by McDaniels. And both times it was one was the transition finish. That was just him, you know, busting his ass, getting out in transition. That's just like him taking advantage of the opportunity. The one in the first half, the like, you know, LaMelo, you and I both tweeted out the clip, like whip pass. That only worked because Jalen McDaniels, you know, snuck along the baseline into space, right? Like his guy stepped up, he snuck in behind and he was open. Now LaMelo's pass was ridiculous, but McDaniels brings enough stuff to the table offensively that he really is like a solid, like fifth guy when he's out there. So I agree with you. I think he is, he's going to have to be huge for them, especially, we'll see when, you know, if and when PJ is able to come back, but they're going to be without Miles Bridges for a while. And they're going to need Jalen McDaniels to play like this every night for the next 2 weeks, basically.
Yeah, I think it was like a month ago that I said that like out of anybody that can take advantage of the situation that the Hornets are in with all these players missing, it would be Jalen McDaniels. Borrego has always said that it's not the reason he hasn't played hasn't been because of any kind of like lack of performance. It's just because there just hasn't been room for him to play. And so he has taken advantage of this opportunity with all these people out, and maybe we can transition to that. We have Cody Martin out. We have Devontae Graham out. We got the news today that Miles Bridges will be out, I guess, 10 to 14 days. I don't know really what determines the 10 versus the 14. Yeah. So he will be out. So 10 days takes us to May 14th, if my math is correct. And that would leave you with two games left in the season of Knicks and the Wizards. 14 days out, which is probably where it's going to end up, I would assume, would take you to May 18th, which is the first day of the play-in, which is not ideal in terms of like getting yourself back into game shape in terms of just, hey, step out on the court. We got a play-in game today. Let's go, Bridges. You've been one of our most impactful players. Let's turn it on like we did. And then obviously, PJ Washington, we heard the breaking news prior to this that he was out for personal reasons. Now, PJ should be back, I would think, by Thursday or Friday. I mean, we don't know for certain, but Miles news is definitely definitely another unfortunate set of circumstances for the Hornets here. Now, I will say this, Brian. I don't think this is like specific to the Hornets. This has been happening across the league.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's a part of it's unfortunately it's been the thing that's hung over the season more than anything else has been the COVID.
Yeah.
And injuries from the compressed season. And the Hornets have just been dealing with a lot of that in a relatively compressed period of time, which is basically like going back to the LaMelo injury against the Clippers, which like that feels like it was 6 months ago, but it was 6 weeks ago. It's just all of this stuff is stacked on top of one another. But yeah, I mean, even a team like the Celtics who like, you know, they're only a couple of games ahead of the Hornets in the standings. Like, they've been crushed with injuries and with COVID. I think they've had more guys miss games because of COVID than any other team in the league. And there's plenty of other teams that have been hit with this stuff. The Wizards, another team that Charlotte, on the opposite side of Charlotte, that they're jockeying with for a position in the East. And it just, the Miles news is, you know, obviously most importantly, you want everyone to be safe and healthy. You hope everyone's okay. But if you're looking at it strictly just from like basketball, it's a bummer because he'd been, you know, basically the brightest spot on, you know, he'd been the most fun thing about the team for the last month. He was playing so well, best basketball of his career, you know, not even close. And he was doing so much for Charlotte. Richie, you and I have talked about this, but they are moving him all over the court offensively, all over the court, putting him everywhere, running different actions with him, playing both sides of the pick and roll. And it just really seemed like a light had sort of like come on for him. So never a good time for this to happen, but especially it feels just like especially cruel now because he was playing the kind of basketball that a guy like him must just spend his entire life dreaming of playing, you know, being a featured player in the NBA and kicking ass. And then to have that just like, you know, have the rug pulled out from underneath you. Yeah, it sucks. It really does.
Yeah. I mean, we were talking about, you know, like you said, putting him all over the court, putting the ball in his hands, playing off ball. We even got into a discussion through DM about the flex offense and how that's evolved. That's the offense that I ran in high school. Like, we had a continuous flex offense. So I know exactly these flex cuts that I'm able to recognize pretty quickly. I know Brian's more of an X and O guy, but flex cuts and flex screens, I can see that right away because that's all I did in high school. And I actually asked Borrego about that in terms of using that a little bit more often, more frequently with Bridges.
Well, he gets ahead of steam, you know, and I think back to like a Corey Maggette. Remember Corey Maggette? He used to do some, you know, similar power and strength. And once that train gets moving, it's tough to stop. So getting Miles on the run is a focus all season for us, and he's taken to it. So we do it a little bit out of the flex. We do it in some other areas as well. He does it just sometimes in flow, as you've seen. He just catch and goes, you know, off a closeout. You know, we've done a little bit now out of the flex game. So it's a real strength of his. When he gets going to that right hand with some power and he's able to make plays, get to the rim, and I think that's another level of growth for him. Even there's another gear there as well, you know, moving into this summer to develop and into next year. I think he can really be a guy that can get downhill off those catches very consistently, even, you know, as we're seeing it right now. I still think there's even more there.
As effective as it has been, you know, without Miles, you know, running around there as a cutter and a screener, his ability, like he and PJ, and this is really why like the offense is really going to miss those guys for however long they're out. Certainly the playmaking with Miles and the 3-point shooting, like both those guys have just been scorching hot from above the break recently. But their ability to threaten defenses as screeners, right? They can screen and then immediately be a scoring threat, whether it be a roll, whether it be a pop, whether it's them on that pistol action, then going into the post. And now you finally had LaMelo back and you thought, man, finally, for the first time in a long time. And it's a different version of Miles because he's playing the best basketball of his career. We're going to get to see these guys be screen threats with this guard. And now what can the offense look like after it being sort of like stuck in mud for a month? What's it going to look like? To not have that. I mean, they're going to have to do stuff differently on offense, more ghost screens, which we saw tonight. I do like them using Cody Zeller as a screen roll guy. They're going to need his playmaking. Charlotte was plus 12 with Zeller on the court in 17 minutes tonight. He had a couple really nice finishes and an assist as well. So they just need to get that from Zeller. They love to run that five out delay look with PJ and Miles in the middle. They can use Zeller in that too, but he has to become activated as a front court player for them now. And, you know, it's just been a weird season for Zeller, in and out of the rotation. He comes back. I'm not surprised it didn't go well against Miami. Now it's like, it went It went very poorly, to be clear. Like, even as a Zeller stan, like, I recognize it didn't go well. But it's also like, yeah, man, he hasn't played in a week. Now you're asking him in the middle of the second half to, like, go play against Bam Adebayo. Doesn't seem like a lot of fun.
No.
So, I don't know. Malik's going to play. But I mean, like, Charlotte did not shoot the ball that well tonight. They still got a road win. You know, Malik's going to play better. Even Rozier, who had big shots down the stretch, I mean, he had a horrible night shooting the basketball until the final, you know, 2.5 minutes or whatever. So get those guys hot, get those guys going. Let LaMelo's playmaking unlock stuff. Let Zeller as a screener unlock stuff. Have McDaniels fill in all the gaps. And I guess the last thing we should mention this guy, because I just thought
Caleb.
Yeah, Caleb. Got to talk about Caleb. I mean, I know he's not, like, really in the rotation, but, man, that dude's just trying to catch bodies every time he drives to the hoop. Like, hey, there are a few guys that have, like, more of a thirst for trying to, like, dunk than that guy. But a couple big spot-up threes. He scored in a couple of different ways. Two steals in this game, a block.
He had this one baseline cut, too, where I think it was Wanamaker that found him, which was great. So you talked about getting behind the defense. He got behind the defense. I was most impressed by his drive in the first quarter on Stewart. I don't know if you remember that play, but he just bodied him up. And obviously, bodying up Stewart is not an easy task. Finished through contact. Yeah. I don't think he made the and-one free throw, but regardless, you're going to have to find these, like, random performances from Caleb Martin and Jalen McDaniels to an extent just to kind of keep things steady with everyone that's in this rotation right now, because anyone's got to step up. So
it's going to be, I mean, basically you saw tonight they played. I mean, Biombo played 24 and a half minutes, Zeller 17 minutes, Vernon Carey Jr. 6.5 minutes. Yeah. There's your 48 minutes of center. Like, for a team like Charlotte that has basically played small ball for half the minutes this season, just looking at, like, how they've used PJ, you know, you're going to see a bigger, I guess, at least at the center spot, a bigger Charlotte team until PJ comes back. But it's just tough for them right now because the three guys that are out, along with Devontae, who they could have certainly used tonight as well, they're just missing, you know, between Hayward, PJ, and Miles. And again, PJ should be back sooner. It's going to probably be a while for Miles and who knows with Hayward, but it's like, those are the guys they unlock small ball with, you know, like, and all those guys are out at the same time. Those are the guys that can really go matchup hunting with because of their ability to shoot and to pass and to post. And they're missing. Like, it's harder. It's going to be harder for them to counter and to attack mismatches, and it's going to be harder for them to get through these small ball lineups, which that's going to also, like, probably change how they have to guard pick and roll. Like, they're not going to be able to switch as much. They mixed up their pick and roll coverages tonight. They played, like, a decent amount of drop, at least in the third quarter. So again, these are just small things to keep an eye on. When PJ comes back, he'll solve some of this, but it is going to differentiate how they play, you know, for at least the short-term future.
The timing was just the worst because LaMelo came back and you thought things were going to be, you know, on the up and up. And then you have these two things that occur. And the good thing is, like, you can tell how infectious LaMelo is by the way that the players around him play in terms of, like, you know, those first couple of games when he came back, it was a little bit out of control, but everyone was wanting to run and he was pushing the pace. And I think in the second half tonight, you saw more of that. The first half, it felt a little lethargic. Like I said, it probably has a lot to do with the opponent because I think in the back of their minds, they knew they can just flip a switch against the Pistons. But they came out more aggressive with the energy much higher in the second half. And even LaMelo in the beginning of the fourth quarter was very aggressive attacking the hoop. But just a lot of up and down movement when you have LaMelo out there. It's very infectious. And we will see when PJ comes back. But like we mentioned before, Miles won't be back until the middle of May and potentially not until the first day of the play-in. The remaining schedule for the Hornets, a lot of home games. I'll tell you that much. A lot of home games. Bulls, Magic, Pelicans, Nuggets, Clippers. That's actually five straight home games right there. And then we end the season at Knicks, at Wizards. To me, I mean, the Miles news kind of threw me off here, but probably, you know, 3 to 4 wins there. I can see a win against the Bulls, a win against the Magic, and then maybe picking up a win either against the Pelicans or the Wizards. The Knicks, the Clippers, the Nuggets might be the three teams that are going to obviously give the Hornets the toughest task here. I mean, do you see what, 3 or 4 wins there, Brian, out of those last 7 games here?
Yeah, right around there. Yeah. Again, it's hard to say just because of who knows what the roster is going to look like when some of these guys are going to trickle back. Like, I'll feel better once PJ and Devontae are activated, right? Knowing that, like, hopefully those guys can be back sooner rather than later. But yeah, I think, you know, enough hopefully to hang on to 8. I think that's just got to become like what the goal is now, is to just scrap and claw and do what it takes to stay at the 8th spot here.
3 wins gets them to 35 wins on the season, which I think is like 10 or 9 games above like the preseason Vegas rankings, which is awesome, to see. All right, we're going to end with Twitter questions here. A lot deal with PJ and Miles. It's pretty interesting because those are the two players that missed tonight's game. The first question comes from Mark Schindler. If you could only keep one, would it be PJ or Miles? Well, first off, hopefully this is not something that they have to make right now, a decision they have to make right now. I think the Hornets would love to keep both of them. I know that there's some overlap with their play, and that's why Miles Bridges came off the bench to start the season, because JB wanted Miles to play the 4 more frequently. And, you know, with PJ starting at the 4, he couldn't play them both at the same time unless they were going small ball. So to me, Brian, I'm going to go Miles Bridges. I've said this before. It's a tough decision. I don't want to choose one over the other. Maybe this is a decision that comes a couple seasons down the road. I think both of them are going to be in the core for the Hornets. One might just be a more prominent role. And I know this term is overused a lot, but the swing skill for Miles this season and just in future season has been his shooting. I think if he can get that down consistently, to me, this answer is easier and I would swing towards Miles more heavily. And that's kind of why I'm choosing Miles, because I'm banking on the strides that he's made this season, that will continue. Yeah. And I'm not even just talking about his off the dribble shooting. I'm just talking about shooting in yeah. general. That off the dribble yeah. shooting that we've seen this season is really just an added bonus. I like his playmaking. That's been a development. I think his defense has improved this season. His athleticism has always been there. We've seen those weak side blocks. And then one thing that I just kind of want to note, it's more of an intangible. I think it's his mentality has changed this year. Just the way that he talks about, you know, maybe his leadership role and how he approaches things. It seems like he's more locked in this season and he takes things personally, or he's been more transparent about what he wants to do on the defensive side of the court. And he even noted over the offseason that he realized that his off-ball defense was an issue. And yes, he still has those like lapses on defense, but wouldn't you say that he probably has had, you know, less of those this year? They don't stick out in my mind.
Definitely. I actually think, and I don't think you were done here, but I just do want to mention, I think that leaf started to turn the back half of last season too. But yes, in general, in one of the games recently, I can't remember if it was the Detroit game over the weekend or the Miami game, there were a couple guys where he got back cut on, but it was hard to tell if it was exactly his fault or because their help responsibilities can be kind of weird. If it was like a switch that wasn't communicated or whatever, regardless, right. I agree. Yes. I think they have been less frequent and less glaring in nature.
Yeah. I mean, I was basically done, but if I had to choose, it would be Miles. I know that PJ pairs well with LaMelo, but we've also seen how Miles and LaMelo can pair as well. It's kind of one of those pick and roll, pick and pop things. Like if you want a pick and pop partner, go PJ. Although, like I said, that shooting, that swing skill.
They both can do it. Yeah, the thing. That's why we were just talking a couple minutes ago about them being threats as screeners. It's because they can both pop, and they can then create off that. They can get into DHO game. They can both roll. You know, obviously PJ is not the above the rim athlete that Miles is, but you know, PJ can catch a lob, and obviously PJ is a pretty good post up player as well. And boy, that shot of his is just so damn pretty. I mean, he's shooting the hell out of the basketball right now from deep for PJ. But first off, thanks for the question, Mark. Shout out Mark, one of the better guys out there on NBA Twitter. He's kind of blown up recently, so glad he was willing to contribute to the questions here. But first off, I don't want to choose between these two. I mean, it's the hypothetical, the question. And like, luckily, I don't think Charlotte has to choose either. I get that there's some overlap or whatever, but because they're both hybrid guys and PJ can scale up to five, right? And all of a sudden you can click in. They already have a small ball center that they can play with Miles or with LaMelo. That's really great. Like they don't have to go out and find that. They have it on the roster now. It's cost controlled on a team deemed deal. And like Miles is probably a four, but you know, he can play the three. And if some of the playmaking and shooting, like if that stuff comes online, then like he's in an even better spot to be like a three. I don't know where Miles' ceiling is. I don't know where he tops out. His ceiling, I think, is higher because of the athleticism.
Correct.
They're age-wise, Miles is like, I think, 5 months older than PJ, but they're close in age. I do think Miles, again, because of the athleticism and because of the live dribble creation, I think he has a higher ceiling than PJ. But I also don't know where Miles Bridges tops out. Like, can Miles be a number two guy on a 50-win team? Can he do that? I don't know. He might top out as like a three guy, you know, a Tobias Harris type. Yeah. You know what I mean? And hell, that's, you know, maybe PJ can get to that level too. For all, I mean, Harris has been like a kind of an analog for his career, at least since he entered the league or was getting ready for the draft. So I don't want to choose, quite frankly. Like I honestly, I hope the team keeps these guys together as long as possible. And I think there's a question we can maybe get to that involves them as like a quote unquote big three. So maybe we can use as a transition to that. But if I had to pick one, not to be like pure prisoner of the moment, because like this is a question I would have answered differently 6 months ago. It's hard not to say Miles at this point, yeah. But like, they're both like, what's great is Charlotte doesn't have to choose.
Exactly.
They don't have to.
Exactly.
And that's a nice spot that they've gotten themselves into. And I'm really glad that they stayed pat at a variety of moments they've had to maybe move one of those guys. They stayed patient and now they're getting to see those guys sort of like blossom playing together. So I want both those guys here to keep developing, keep marinating, keep playing with LaMelo.
I think Mark will accept that answer from you. I guess that was not a cop-out answer, but I think he'll accept it.
better.
You've always been the highest, I feel like, on PJ on this pod. Not that Spencer or I have been low on him, but you just have seen stuff out of him and you definitely have higher hopes than maybe I do or Spencer. But again, it you don't want to choose, and we kind of don't like this question for that, Mark. So we'll go to the next one. That man, Fran, how good can a Ball Bridges PJ big three be? I think they could be solid. I mean, they're not going to reach the levels of any of these national pundits that are to come out and say, hey, the Hornets big three is Ball Bridges and PJ tonight. I don't think they'll ever reach that level. Obviously, a lot's going to be dependent on the two players that we just talked about, PJ and Miles. I think the hope that maybe Charlotte can pick up another player closer to LaMelo's caliber. You really want to be considered a big three? I just don't know if these three players would ever be considered a big three, quote unquote, on a national level. But they can all work well together. I think it's a fun brand of basketball that all three of these guys, and again, the most successful basketball this season has been when PJ's at the five and Bridges is at the four. And then obviously you add in Ball just to have the passing and the facilitation between the two of them. So, yeah, I mean, I don't know how I would describe it, but just like very solid. I mean, but not nationally ranked by any means.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. Maybe, a second round of the playoff team, win a series or two in the playoffs, but it's hard to tell. Like these guys are LaMelo's 19, PJ's 22, Miles just turned 23. Like they're super young. So like if you're projecting out, that's a little bit tricky to do at this point because they are very young. We've talked about this in the pod a couple of times. I do think you'll eventually need to get a vertical lob threat at center. Mm-hmm. but you know, you could have a roster that could be the this big three with you know, PJ being the backup five essentially, and his switch defense has been so good this year. His rim protection's been better. Like, PJ's just made a jump as a defender, in my opinion, this season. So it would be nice to have that type of versatility. They'll need to get another defender on the wing, you know. But in theory, these pieces could fit together. It's like LaMelo one, you know, three and D guy at the two, Miles three, PJ four, you know, rim running center five, right? And then all of a sudden, like, that's sounds kind of nice. I don't know if that can ever be a championship level team. It almost depends on how good Bridges becomes, right? Which we were sort of just discussing. It's going to be key, I think, that you get a big wing that you can put with LaMelo. I think that's going to be, so we've talked about this before as well, but I think it's going to be like a key thing that they're going to have to add if they really want to like get again to these sort of like outer bands of the team development around LaMelo. These are some pieces that you're going to need. Maybe Miles can be that.
Right.
This version that he's played the last month is that. I just will, and some of it feels very real and sustainable. Maybe not the pull up shooting, but so we'll just see. I don't think that group has the ability to be like the core of like a title team, you know, a real contender, but a very, very good team, especially depending on how they build out the roster around those guys.
It's funny. I just looked up the on-off stats with Miles, PJ, and LaMelo on the court, 319 minutes this season. Actually, only a net rating of 0.4. So offense and defensive rating, pretty similar. But
yeah,
I guess you got to take that with a grain of salt, because I'm sure you can pull up any three-man lineup on the Hornets, and there's not going to be one that is in the positive when you play that many minutes together. So
yeah,
but overall, we've liked what we've seen from those three. Mm-hmm. All right. From at good old Bruce, what can JB do about the center position? How has Cody suddenly become unplayable?
Yeah.
Well, there's not much he can do right now with the personnel. I think the best option, which we've talked about constantly on this podcast, is just PJ at the small ball five and what that unlocks offensively and how that creates advantages for the Hornets on the offensive side of the ball. I prefer Cody to Biz, but as we've seen, you know, in the past handful of games, it's been the opposite for JB. And I just can't get a good read on why that decision has been made. I don't know why. I think it must be with the energy and the defense that Biz brings. But in my mind, I know that Cody has slipped a little bit defensively, and he's not as agile and quick as he used to be, as, you know, obviously everyone ages. But to me, the difference between Cody's offense and Biz's offense is greater than Biz's defense and Cody's defense to me. I get it. Cody was very lackadaisical on the defensive side against the Heat a couple nights ago. What can he do about the center position? Not much. I mean, you talked about Vernon Carey Jr. maybe a little bit, but it all has to do with personnel. And I don't think JB's necessarily content with his personnel right now in terms of the five position. And we just talked about it. That's the one area in which LaMelo could use a lob threat, could use someone that adds that vertical spacing. And neither of these really do that. One, because Cody can't really get off the ground without actually kind of getting a runway. And then Biz, you're not expecting him to catch everything, you know, in his vicinity. So I can't get a grip on this center position, and I've kind of given up on it.
What they can do is be sad about it for now, and then I don't know, it's like sign Rashawn Holmes in free agency. He's a guy that I'm sure they kicked the can on the trade deadline, but it seems like Sacramento justifiably was asking for a lot. He's a very good player. Yeah, I mean, first off, we've been talking about the center position for a while now. And even last week, the second episode that Spencer and I did, we talked about the center position for a good bit on that podcast. So I would recommend, if you're looking for more discourse on the center rotation, go back. Spencer and I talked about it for a while. I've been banging this drum for weeks, months now. I don't know. But just assuming Charlotte makes the playoffs, and let's just lump the play in into the scenario, the 48 minutes per game at center, I don't think this will happen, but I am like steadfast in my belief that it has to get, you have to get to 48 minutes of PJ and Zeller at the five. Now you probably need your, maybe you even need your full complement of players. Like you know, certainly having Miles back helps with that. Having Hayward back helps with that, cause those guys can play the four. And, but I just don't think you can play Biz because of the offense in the postseason. I think he will, like, and if they played, if they played Philadelphia, yeah, you probably need Biz for some Embiid minutes or whatever. I think you've got to play, you've got to roll when Zeller's going to have nights like that every now and then, like he did against Miami. But I think you got to just roll through those unless the matchup dictates that you need Biz's like strength up front, that assuming you have your full complement of players, you've just got to, you have to go with Zeller and PJ. And if for some reason those guys were both in foul trouble, hell, I'd say just play Bridges and McDaniels at the 4-5 instead of Bismack. But yeah. I know these things like aren't going to happen.
It's so funny. You've talked about this for like, seven episodes straight about the center position. And I think you even made a mention of it on last podcast. Like, yeah, I'm sure the listeners are tired of me talking about this, but this is what I want. And this is what I know is not going to happen.
Yeah. I know it's not going to. It seems so obvious. I acknowledge that like matchups could dictate that. And I guess we can use that as a transition into the final question here. This is from Rodimus Prime on Twitter. Shout out Rod, who asks, am I the only one who wants the Nets in the first round? It would be a fun series. He wouldn't want to play the 76ers or the Bucks. Rod also notes that he realizes the outcome is going to be the same, which is a Hornets win, obviously, yes, for the sweep. Exactly.
Who do we want the Hornets to win against here?
Yeah. I actually would prefer Giannis. So I'll say this, my first initial thought to this is yes. If assuming Charlotte has its full complement of players, the Nets are terrifying, right? Like this is the best offense in the world. This is the best half court offense in the world, or they're right there with the Clippers. This is the best isolation offense in the world.
I think they got a big three, Brian. I think they got a big three.
Yes. Kevin Durant, James Harden, and Bruce Brown. It's the big three that everyone talking about the NBA just can't stop buzzing about. I'm sorry to leave Joe Harris out of that, but I do think like Philadelphia as a matchup is just a crisis. Always. Honestly, like Embiid is, and that's not even just with the Hornets. It's like, I was watching them play the Suns the other night and like Ayton got in foul trouble. And it was like, dude, you're going to have Dario Saric come in and try to guard this monster. Like this is like definitely not going to work. And it didn't, and he's just such a magnet for drawing fouls that I just don't want to match up with Embiid. I just don't. So as far as the Bucks go, I think maybe I wouldn't necessarily like mind that matchup as much. I don't know if I would prefer Milwaukee or Brooklyn, knowing that Charlotte's going to lose in, you know, four or five games regardless. But I think there are some things they can do to make Brooklyn's base lineup a little uncomfortable. We've seen the Bucks try to switch a lot against Charlotte to varying degrees of success with Brooke Lopez. That's more palatable when they play Giannis at five, right? And they go to, play PJ Tucker and Middleton along the front line with Holiday and DiVincenzo or Pat Connaughton. I like some of the guys that Charlotte has to throw at Giannis, although it feels like PJ's just destined to get in foul trouble in that matchup. Brooklyn's defense has played better, if I'm not mistaken, I want to say.
They're the worst out of these three, right?
So that would be my thought would be that, like, yeah, Charlotte can't stop the Nets from scoring, but a full strength Hornets roster can score against Brooklyn. Correct. Like, you know, Brooklyn's going to, they switch a lot of stuff, and Charlotte maybe doesn't have like a ton of switch beaters on the lineup, but Miles, Hayward, there's enough PJ as a post up threat, LaMelo, you know, when he gets cooking in the drive game. So I think I would most prefer the Bucks, but I think it's close with the Nets. What do you say, Richie?
Well, I agree that I want to avoid the 76ers at all costs. Just from a stylistic game, Embiid is just a beast that Charlotte just has no answer for. He can feast in the post all night long. He's done a very good job of passing out of the post this season as well. And it's funny, considering all the attention that he receives in the post, in the paint, you would think that the Sixers get up more three-point attempts, like just a, you know, kick out with Curry or Green or Harris.
Korkmaz.
Yeah, who I think might be injured right now. But yes, I mean, it's almost impossible to defend both the inside and the outside against that team. So that would be no fun to watch. And that's been a thorn in the Hornets' side for the past several seasons. So I agree on that point. I don't know. I think I probably would enjoy maybe the Nets series a little bit more. Obviously, the end goal here is it's going to be the same, right? I mean, it's just going to be a shootout with the Nets in the sense that this offense, like you mentioned, is just so freaking good. Kevin Durant can go off for 45 at any moment. Kyrie is just an amazing finisher around the hoop. So in terms of enjoyment and pace and style, I know the Bucks have upped their pace this season, but I guess I would choose the Nets. But again, we're splitting hairs between them and the Bucks. To me, you know what happened against the Bucks? What would happen would be Bryn Forbes and or Bobby Portis would go off against the Hornets.
Go off. Yes. Yeah. The Portis explosion in the first round I'm just going to be honest. That would annoy me.
Exactly.
One thing I will say, it looks like I did have this a little wrong the last 2 weeks. Brooklyn's defense is 23rd in the NBA in efficiency, but and for the season now, the Nets have settled in as the number 23 defense for the entire season, according to Cleaning the Glass. But at least they're not, 29th or whatever. The last thing I'll say, I know in this hypothetical we were thinking about it as like full strength or whatever. Mm-hmm. Also, just sort of like given the injury concerns of the Nets, I mean, some of these, I mean, Durant, Harden, obviously when they've been on the court, they've been incredible this season, but now he would be wishing for an injury. But just like the one team that maybe has, right, at least for this season, has sort of like the most jagged luck with injuries is also Brooklyn. So maybe that also adds to the what would make them a slightly more palatable. All these are obviously like nightmare matchups for Charlotte.
Is there any way that Charlotte can just climb to the fourth seed and play Atlanta? Like, is that possible?
What stinks is like they were on course for that before everything just went awful during the LaMelo injury, then Malik, then Hayward. It sucks because like they were right there, and who knows what would have happened if they had like stayed healthy to an extent. I mean, New York's come on so strong here, but
yeah, they have.
But yeah, like that's that. I wanted them to stay at 4 or 5 because that way I thought they could have won a series. And it's like any of these other matchups, it's like if you're at 6, then you've got to play one of the big three. You know, if you're at 6 or lower, then you got to play one of the big three. And that's just like for Charlotte is, their odds of winning that series are going to be, microscopic.
What's funny talking about Brooklyn and Milwaukee, but Milwaukee has beaten Brooklyn in their past two games. I think they played back-to-back games.
Did you watch the game on Sunday those two?
I did not, but Giannis had what, like 50 points or whatever? And he had like 36 tonight, so.
Giannis it was like one of the most complete offensive games he's probably had. He did like a little bit of everything. It was very, very, very impressive game for the reigning MVP here. But Durant was awesome too. It was a super fun game. Those teams are very talented.
I've always been the one that like obviously try your best to slow down Giannis, but allow him to shoot threes and don't allow a Bryn Forbes or a Bobby Portis to go off as well. I mean, I get that's easier said than done, but that's kind of how I would approach things. You know, put your best defender as you can on Giannis. Try to shut him down, but try not to like just totally have your whole defense surrounding him because he's just going to start kicking it out and it's just not going to be fun. So
yeah, his passing has gotten a little bit better this year, I think, right? Like, I think he's made strides as a passer this year. And there's certainly plenty of like, at least with that starting lineup, I'm not like in love with Milwaukee's bench, but there's plenty of, weaponry and spot up guys that they can place around Giannis that are also like two way playmakers. Bucks are going to be tough. Eastern Conference semifinal, second round and semifinal, in the conference finals are going to be awesome.
And like we always mention, it's going to be interesting to actually do a podcast, even if it's for a play-in tournament. Like I want to do a play-in post-game pod. I don't think we've done that since because I think we started this definitely podcast the year after they made the playoffs. So, and they hadn't made it since. So We're going to go ahead and sign off here. As always, we'd appreciate a rating and review on Apple Podcasts. Anything to spread the word, tell a friend, retweet it on Twitter. I am Richie for BG. Thanks for joining us and have a good one.